Welcome, and thank you for standing by. I'd like to inform all parties that your lines have been placed in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer segment of today's conference. Today's conference is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting over to your host, Mr. Benjamin Haynes. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Calvin, and thank you all for joining us for today's Vital Signs Report on Cervical Cancer. We're joined by CDC's Principal Deputy Director, Dr. Ileana Arias, who will provide the opening remarks. Following those remarks, Dr. Arias, along with Dr. Vicky Bernard, the report's lead author, and Dr. Mona Soraya, will take your questions. Now I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Arias.
Thank you, and thank you all for joining us today to discuss the Vital Signs Report, which is a special MMWR publication that highlights critical public health issues facing our nation. Each month in Vital Signs, we focus on the latest data about one of the critical issues facing our nation, but more importantly, what can be done about it. At CDC, we work 24/7 to save lives and protect people, and part of our role in doing so is to take a critical look at our healthcare system and to be honest with ourselves by talking about where we are falling short. Cervical cancer, unfortunately, is one of those areas where, although there has been great improvement, we can do more and we can do better than we have done. Cervical cancer is a top cancer cause for women, currently ranking number 13 for new cancer cases and number 14 for cancer death. We have seen incredible reductions in cervical cancer incidence and death since the Pap test was first introduced in 1950 for cancer screening. We know that cervical cancer screening works. Today, we have additional screening and prevention tools, including testing for the human papillomavirus, or HPV, which could lead to cervical cancer, and the HPV vaccine, which could prevent getting HPV infection. Together, cervical cancer screening and HPV vaccine could prevent as many as 93% of all cervical cancers. Despite these important advances and opportunities, however, the Vital Signs reports some sobering statistics and gaps in cervical cancer prevention. Every year, 12,000 women get cervical cancer, and 4,000 women still die from it. While deaths from cervical cancer have fallen since the 1950s, we have stagnated in recent years. Between 2007 and 2011, the death rate remained stable, not yet reaching the Healthy People 2020 objective, which means that thousands of women continue to die each year from cervical cancer. We can do better than this. With both screening and vaccination, we can reach and we can actually go beyond the Healthy People 2020 objective and continue to reduce cervical cancer deaths. We know that cervical cancer screening saves lives, but unfortunately in 2012, over 8 million women between the ages of 21 and 65 didn't get this life-saving screening in the past 5 years. With this Vital Signs, we ask ourselves why deaths have stagnated and why so many women have not gotten screened as recommended, and not surprisingly, the usual suspects emerge. About 1 in 4 women without health insurance have not been screened for cervical cancer in the past 5 years. However, access to health insurance isn't the only gap to close. The same number, about 1 in 4, of women with a regular doctor haven't been screened for cervical cancer in the past 5 years. But of the women not screened, 7 in 10 women did actually have a regular doctor and health insurance. So although some of the failure to screen and prevent is related to lack of access to insurance and lack of access to a regular health care provider, other barriers come into play. Some of the failure is related to individual barriers, such as lack of awareness and knowledge, lack of transportation, cultural beliefs, and others that play a role in a woman going in for cervical cancer screening. The Vital Signs also points out where in our nation we need to do better. The South, unfortunately, has the highest cervical cancer burden, both incidence and death rates, and the largest percentage of women who are not screened. We know that cervical cancer occurs mainly in low-resource, underserved regions and is linked to poverty, race and ethnicity, and other sources of health disparities. The southern states have a higher concentration of lower-resource areas that have been shown to have higher rates of disease. Barriers include structural barriers such as transportation in rural areas and access, and subjective interpersonal barriers such as fear of results, mistrust of healthcare system, and knowledge about the test. The Affordable Care Act will help with financial barriers and will help women get connected with a regular doctor. But we also need to address additional individual and systemic barriers to women. As I mentioned before, in addition to screening, we now have a vaccine to protect against cervical cancer. The HPV vaccines protects against HPV infections that cause most cervical cancers. Yet we know that right now only about 1 out of every 3 girls and 1 out of every 7 boys have received all 3 doses of the vaccine for protection. Preteens and teens are not getting HPV vaccination as often as other recommended vaccines, even though it is safe and it is effective. These numbers show us that we continue to miss opportunities to prevent cervical cancer. We need to close these gaps and make sure that all women get the recommended screening, especially among vulnerable populations. We also need to make sure that boys and girls get HPV vaccine when they receive other adolescent vaccines. So what can we do to increase the opportunities for all women to get preventive services they need? First of all, we need to do more to close the gap for women already linked into the medical system. When women see their doctors and nurses for other visits, they can help women understand the importance of getting screened for cervical cancer. Every visit to a provider can be an opportunity to screen or make sure that women are referred for recommended cervical cancer screenings and understand their screening options. When doctors and nurses give preteens and teens their other recommended adolescent vaccinations, it's another big opportunity. Providers can recommend HPV vaccine as strongly as they do other vaccines. Again, it is safe, it is effective. State and local public health departments can also promote recommended screening options and HPV vaccines to the public. Health departments can work with Medicaid programs, community health centers, and community groups to find women who need screening, help them get their medical appointments, and get the recommended follow-up care. The federal government is supporting these efforts in a number of different ways. CDC's National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program provides low-income, uninsured, and underinsured women access to timely breast and cervical cancer screening and diagnostic services in all 50 states, in D.C., the territories, and 11 American Indian Alaska Native tribes or tribal organizations. Under the Affordable Care Act, most health insurance will cover preventive services like cervical cancer screening and HPV vaccines at no cost to the patient. The Vaccines for Children, or VFC, program provides immunizations such as the HPV vaccine to eligible children free of charge. This increases access to children who might not otherwise be vaccinated because of inability to pay. The bottom line for us is that no woman should ever die from cervical cancer. Screening is proven to work, but not enough women are getting these recommended preventive services. We need to take action now to increase cervical cancer screening by educating women, eliminating barriers to care, and seizing on existing opportunities to provide this preventive care. We already know that over half of cervical cancers occur in women who have never been screened or who have not been screened in the past 5 years. Increasing screening among these women will make the greatest impact on the cervical cancer burden in the U.S. Every visit to a provider is an opportunity to screen or make sure that women are getting screened and that preteens and teens are getting vaccinated. I'd like to thank you for joining us today, and we are now very happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. It's star 1 to ask a question. One moment, please, for our first question to come in. Our first question comes from Heather Pesaro with CBS News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Two questions. One is the United Services Preventive Task Force recommended in March 2012 that they recommend against screening for cervical cancer with HPV testing alone or in combination with cytology in women younger than age 30 years. So I wanted to get your response to that and how that recommendation. I realize that they made this recommendation in 2012, and you were looking at the years from 2007 to 2011, but wondering what impact you imagine that that might have on screening rates going forward. And my second question is, you mentioned the relationship between socioeconomic tiers and screening and mortality rates, and I'm wondering, and you mentioned the South, so is it known which providers are providing these screenings? Is it primarily happening in primary care settings or at specialist office, you know, OBGYNs? Thank you.
So I'll address, this is Vicki Bernard, and I'll address the question first.
This is Vicki Bernard, and I will address your first question about the guidelines changing in 2012, where women less than 30 do not get the HPV test with the Pap test. And that's correct. And the reason that the guidelines are saying to wait until a woman's 30 is because prior to that, HPV is very common. The infection clears very easily. And so what we've seen is that once a woman gets 30, if she's still continues to have HPV, it's usually HPV that's progressing and that may go on to pre-cancer or invasive cervical cancer. Before that, that HPV has been known to clear, but a woman 21 to 30 still needs to get the Pap test every 3 years. She still needs to be screened. Did I address your first question?
Yes. So because you were capturing wasn't your data capturing women ages 21 to 65?
We were, and you're right. Our data was only able to look at Pap testing because the guidelines changed in 2012, and the survey that we looked at for the behavioral risk factor surveillance system only asked about Pap tests. We do not collect HPV testing. That will come about in 2014.
So setting aside HPV testing, just so it's clear for readers and viewers, the recommendation, setting aside HPV, women age 21 and up should still get cervical cancer Paps every 3 years.
That's correct. If they're just getting the Pap test, yes, they should get the Pap test every 3 years.
And then after 30, then they can get the HPV.
Yes, after 30, it's their choice. They can get the Pap test with the HPV test called co-test, or they can get the Pap test every 3 years.
Thank you.
And then your second question about the South, and do we know which providers are providing these Pap tests? And I guess this would be for any region. The primary care providers do provide screening as well as specialists, and we're really encouraging primary care providers to do the screening now that we have all national organizations with a consensus of when to screen and how often to screen. It's a very easy opportunity for primary care providers, especially in community health centers, to reach that never really screened population and to be able to, for them to be able to access cervical cancer screening easily.
And in the primary care setting, I mean, do people have the appropriate training to be able to give the screening?
Yes, they should, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Hey, Calvin, ready for the next question?
Our next question comes from Leanne Winnick with CBS News. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. Could you clarify the age recommendations for the HPV vaccine and the ideal time? I know preteens get it, but is it effective after someone's become sexually active? And what do you know as far as insurance coverage past a certain age?
Hi, this is Mona Soraya. Yes, the recommendations for the HPV vaccine, it's to be routinely given at ages 11 to 12. It can be given as young as age 9 up to age 26. The Affordable Care Act is consistent with those ACIP recommendations.
Why not after 26? In other words, is there no effect after adulthood?
That's a great question. The FDA, the manufacturers that currently have the vaccine have recommended it and asked for FDA approval for those ages. It'll probably be most likely less effective given after HPV infection occurs, and usually most women are sexually active by a certain age, by age 16, 17, 50% of women are of the population is actually active. So it would be less effective. And so from a public health recommendation, we're trying to encourage the HPV to be routinely administered during the adolescence, ages 11 to 12, routinely.
Calvin, we have time for two more questions.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Susan Schechtman with CBS News. Your line is open.
Hi, Leanne already asked my question. It's okay. Thank you.
I'm showing no further questions at this time.
So in conclusion, thank you very much for joining us. Again, we are trying to make sure that everybody understands that cervical cancer is highly preventable by engaging in measures that we know are effective, the science are supportive, and are highly accessible, and that is routine, as recommended, cervical cancer screening, and especially the use of HPV vaccine among kids. We look forward to continuing to push for uptake of both of these strategies for the prevention of cervical cancer, and looking forward to seeing the sort of fruits of that labor and hopefully having a vital sign showing that we have gone beyond the stagnation that we've seen over time and started to go back to significant decreasing rates of cancer, cervical cancer, both illness and death among women. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ari. And thank you all for joining. Vital signs materials are going to be available at cdc.gov/vital signs, and there will also be a transcript of this telebriefing at cdc.gov/media. And if you have questions, you can contact the main media line at 404-639-3286. Thank you.